What is up, and welcome back to another episode of the Wizards Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Finberg, and today's episode, we're going to be discussing the Wizards' really quiet start to free agency. I've been getting a lot of questions, a lot of DMs asking me, you know, what is Washington doing? It's kind of like the gif of the guy, you know, poking the thing with the stick and kind of saying, come on, do something. That's kind of what Wizards fans are thinking, obviously, to the start of free agency. And I try to stress the last couple of weeks that I didn't think Washington would really be up to much in free agency, mainly considering, number one, that they're not necessarily in win-now mode, and number two, the fact that they have so many young players and veterans they acquired via trade. And so I think some moves are probably going to need to be made but before you can start moving forward, whether that's waiving players, as we saw they did with Anthony Gill that we'll talk about in a second, whether it's via trading, of veterans. We've seen Brogdon sign in trades discussed. We've seen Kelly Olynyk and Marcus Smart have their names in trade rumors. So we're going to dive into all of that. Obviously going to touch on the Dylan Jones for Colby Jones trade, Anthony Gill being waived, and want to talk about some of that stuff. The first thing and the first order of it is, before we get into free agency, is kind of catching up on some moves over the last couple of days. I tweeted out on the 29th, so I guess Sunday morning, I believe, that it was the final day for the Wizards to guarantee Anthony Gill's $2.5 million salary for the 2025-26 season. Washington ultimately, as David Aldridge reported and as the Wizards PR account confirmed, decided to waive Anthony Gill. I mean, after, you know, a good 5 years with the organization, you know, signed for that, you know, 2020 season, you know, had been with the Wizards since 2020, was their longest tenured player. You know, had played with guys like Isak Bonga, and also ended up playing with guys like Bilal Coulibaly. So it just kind of shows you, you know, how long Gill has been in Washington, a really, you know, true turning of the tides from the old regime to the new regime. And if you understand, you know, the longest tenure Wizard now is Corey Kispert. He's the only player, I believe, the only holdover still from the Tommy Shepard era Wizards. Which is saying something, because I know everyone wants to trade Corey Kispert. If you saw, I posted, actually my brother did it for me because I was driving, but I posted that Corey Kispert was the longest tenure Wizard, and I told my brother, like, just watch. You know, the first comment's going to be, like, not for long. And I was right. There was a lot of not for longs. I know a lot of Wizards fans are wanting to, you know, kind of kick Corey Kispert out the door. I understand it. They're kind of moving forward with this team, you know, makes sense. But again, he's good. And I think Wizards fans need to realize that if they don't decide to trade him, you know, he still has value. He's still a solid player. But again, I don't want to harp on that too much. You know, the Wizards ended up waiving Gill. It's a move that I expected, especially just because, you know, while they are thin in the front court and Gill is another, you know, body that you can play in a small ball five, but realistically a power forward role, he didn't play much, you know, for the Wizards. I believe he only appeared in what, 51 games. For the Wizards last season, averaged 2 points, you know, about two rebounds. So obviously he wasn't there to stop the stat sheet or play heavy minutes. He was there as a veteran mentor for this younger group. It's why they re-upped him last year too with a 2-year extension. Obviously this year non-guaranteed. But I will say this about Anthony Gill. I've only covered, I think, 3 or 4 games at Capital One Arena, you know, in person, you know, only a handful of games. But every single time I was there, when I was on the court pregame, Anthony Gill would literally go down all of the fans standing on courtside and, like, sit down next to them and have a genuine conversation. Like, it wasn't just small talk. Like, he was genuinely trying to get to know them, trying to make them, you know, feel welcome, embraced, and feel like they were a part of the process, part of everything that was going on, you know, during the game. I've never seen that before from a star athlete. Like, we see them being genuine, but he just seemed so genuine. Like, he seemed like he genuinely cared what these people were saying, wanted to make them feel special. And so I've only heard phenomenal things about him. One tidbit that I heard from somebody within the organization is that, you know, Anthony will literally be the first person on the court for practice and, like, the last person off. Like, he's willing to, like, help all of these different players on the team. You know, he'll rebound for him. I forget who reported that in a story, but I apologize for not knowing exactly, but I remember reading that, like, he would stay after and rebound for some of the younger guys. And he doesn't have to do that, but, you know, certainly received a lot of praise from Wizards fans. Obviously, some Wizards fans were basically, I wouldn't say excited to see Gil go, but we're kind of at the point like, yeah, this needed to happen. The time was up. His era and his time with the team was kind of over. You know, they have a lot of veterans now, and certainly I think some people are underscoring how important it is, that 14th, 15th man, you know, how important that guy who's first off the bench for high fives and stuff like that is to a team. But nonetheless, again, this is a move that I expected kind of need to be made with the tightness of the roster, you know, and the spots that are just, you know, not too readily available at this point for a team like the Wizards that have a lot of guys competing for spots. I want to go through some of the things that people said about Gil. This is from Al Sowers on Twitter. He said Gil would regularly come over to him and say hi to his son. Was the only player at the open practice to come sign an autograph. He said he ran into Gil and his family in the Bahamas, and Gil actually remembered them. Got up and talked to him for about 20 minutes. Genuinely good guy. Again, like, that's just one of the many that somebody, you know, commented underneath. My guy Zach Haber said that he saw Gil at the airport, and both he and his wife were extremely, extremely kind. The What's Good DMV podcast said him and his family saw him at a Go-Go game back in January. He said Gil took pictures with the kids and was really cool. Definitely a solid dude. Stephen Powers, one of the guys that's always active in my Twitter spaces. He's a Wizards season ticket holder, so you should know. He said Gil and his wife are some of the best people to be a part of the #DC family, wishing him nothing but the best. My guy Stefan at Steph_Law said that Gil's kids have gone to school with Stefan's kids for several years, so he's gotten to know him and his family. He said Anthony and his wife are truly salt of the earth people. Jesse at JTrain1212 said Gil was always for the kids during the anthem, passed the ball to each kid. They said he said he saw him at a Caps game and got another photo. He said he recreated the photo that they already took. Again, like, I could go on and on about these stories, but I felt it was necessary. Again, I know free agency is going on, but I didn't want to undermine the impact a guy like Gil has clearly had on the Wizards as a team, but also the community, the fan base, being engaging and active, you know, in a time the last 5 years that's been really tumultuous for this fan base, you know, really not much to hang their hat on. So to have a guy that comes in, day out, you know, really hang his hat on being a great person, a great teammate, a great mentor, a great individual. Again, I didn't want to just pass over that. It's not a normal procedure of just waving a guy as the 15th man. You know, Gil's an important part of this process, important part of this team and this culture and this community, especially, you know, coming from UVA, already being a part of the DMV. So, you know, wanted to kind of give him his flowers. Again, the points aren't going to jump off the page. The stats obviously won't. But a guy like Gil is important. And maybe they bring him back. I doubt it with the roster space, and we'll get into that in a second. But certainly a valued member of this organization the last 5 years. So wishing him nothing of the best. I saw a lot of people saying he should come back as a coach. A lot of people wanted to stick around with the organization. Varun Shankar for the Washington Post, I believe, tweeted out something that Gil had said throughout the season, you know, basically saying that he doesn't really have much interest in becoming a coach, at least at that point. And so I don't know if anything has changed. I still think he can play. So certainly we'll maybe see if he can get an opportunity, you know, elsewhere in the NBA. Maybe he goes back to playing overseas where he played before he came to the Wizards. But again, wanted to kind of give Anthony Gil his flowers there. So that's kind of the first part of this before we get into free agency, getting caught up. The second thing is the trade. And this one was kind of out of nowhere. The Wizards, and if you missed it, I'll recap the trade. Essentially, the Wizards traded for Dylan Jones and a 2029 second-round pick in exchange for Colby Jones. So the Wizards send Colby Jones to OKC and in return get Dylan Jones and a 2029 second-round pick, which is via the Houston Rockets. Essentially, OKC needed to open up a roster spot and save about $2.5 million on their books for the 25-26 season and beyond, and basically said, hey, Dylan Jones, we just drafted you last year, but we need to open that spot. And the Wizards were luckily there saying we can match your salaries by giving you another guy in Colby Jones, who had, I believe, $0 guaranteed for the 25-26 season. So basically, OKC clears that money. They waived Colby Jones shortly after, so he's now a free agent. The Wizards take back Dylan Jones, who, and I'll get into him in a second, but cap-wise, He's owed $2.5 million for 25-26 season. But then after that, he has two more years of non-guaranteed money. So the Wizards can move on from him and, again, keeps it open for 2026 and beyond when they obviously just clear that cap space with the Jordan Poole trade. So, again, Washington has the cap space. It's basically like, hey, you know, help me out. I'll help you out. I'll attach a second-round pick. Can you just take on this roster spot and another $2.5 million in salary? And so it works out for both ways. Basically, the Wizards, again, are getting paid by, you know, a second-round pick to take on unwanted salary. It's kind of what you've seen them do throughout the process of this rebuild, taking on unwanted contracts and unwanted salary in exchange for draft capital. And that's another thing that they do with this move. So again, a smaller procedural type move and maybe will be slept on. But again, it's basically a free second round pick. You know, maybe the Wizards will have to part with someone they didn't think they would because they wanted to take back that second round pick. But at the same time, like Colby Jones, Dylan Jones, you know, if Dylan Jones doesn't make the roster, it's not going to be the end of the world. I'm sure he'll make the summer league roster if they don't waive him before. I'm sure he'll compete in training camp for a roster spot. But at the end of the day, Washington basically did this move, not for Dylan Jones, I don't think. Maybe it was a factor, but mainly to take back that second round pick. And if you are new to Dylan Jones, he was a 26th pick in the 2024 NBA draft. Originally, and this is funny, technically drafted by the Wizards. If you remember, the Wizards owned the 26th pick from that Daniel Gafford trade, and they traded up to get, I believe it was pick number 40 and like a future second, if I believe that's right, to move up two spots and to take on, or maybe I think it was actually 26 and 40 or 50, sorry. I'm all over the place. Basically, they moved up to get Keyshawn George at 24. That I believe was originally the Knicks' selection. And then the Knicks got jumped yet again in order for OKC to take Dylan Jones. So the Wizards take Dylan Jones technically at 26. I think it was New York who ended up taking Keyshawn George at 24, and then they swap. And then New York sat there at 26, and instead of taking that selection, OKC traded up. They gave 5 second-round picks to move up and take Dylan Jones at number 26. So clearly OKC liked what Jones did out of Weber State. And then I don't blame them for it. I mean, you know, this is a guy that was a little bit of an older prospect, 22 at the time, but averaged 20.8 points at Weber State. You know, great score there. You know, in the NBA, he didn't do much, obviously, on an OKC team that was pretty loaded. Obviously, they won the title, so you're bringing in a champion in Dylan Jones, technically. But this gives the Wizards 5 first-round picks from the 2024 NBA draft, which is pretty insane. The Nets were getting clowned for keeping all their first-round picks this year, and this is a different situation. Like, Washington only drafted 3 of them, traded for 2. But, you know, the number 2 pick, Alex Saar, number 14, Bob Carrington, 23, A.J. Johnson, 24, Keyshawn George, now 26, Dylan Jones. That's 5 first-rounders from that draft. That's pretty funny that Washington – you know, did that, but that's what happens with you know, your ability to take back second round picks to trade out, you know, and help contending teams. You know, the Wizards are helping OKC here, and in exchange, they get Jones in a second. They're helping out the Bucks by giving them Kuz to what they thought would be help them contend, and the Wizards get back AJ Johnson in return. And so this is kind of what the Wizards are doing. They don't have all the assets like a team like OKC did when they started, by trading Russ, by trading Paul George. You know, they have to work with what they have. They didn't get any first round picks for Bradley Beal, none for Kristaps Porzingis, none for Kyle Kuzma, which again, that's their fault for Kuz. But they're trying to figure it out along the margins. And the Dylan Jones deal is another move. If you don't know Dylan Jones, he's a 6'5", 235-pound wing. He's listed as a forward, but I think he's a little undersized for that at 6'5". He's 23 years old, so older than a lot of the Wizards' young core, but not that old by many standards. 2024-25 stats, 2.5 points, 2 rebounds, 1 assist per game. Not eye-popping, you know, barely played. 38% from the field, 25% from 3, 60% from the free throw line. I will say, like, some Wizards fans were a little bit excited because of the Knicks trading up 5, or the Thunder trading 5 seconds to move up and get him. The fact that he averaged nearly 21 in college, you know, definitely intriguing that he was another first-round pick and he's only in year 2. But I did see a lot of the people in my comment section were Thunder fans basically saying, nah, this guy is not that good. Or, you know, maybe he can be good, but he had a really down year, especially shooting the ball from 3-point range. So, again, I think Dylan Jones has game. You know, certainly the Thunder thought that. They're pretty good at evaluating talent. Look at what they have with that young core. And they traded all those picks to get him. It's just a matter of developing that. And again, you know, if he has a roster spot, maybe he's, you know, a guy they experiment with, you know, in the G League. You know, maybe he's a guy that barely makes the team and you see what you can do with him. He's clearly got talent. Maybe he didn't play the best last year in a limited role with Thunder. But I still think it's a good trade. You know, it's a very low-risk trade. At the end of the day, if Dylan Jones doesn't work out, the Wizards still got basically a second-round pick for free. And they didn't take on any additional salary beyond this upcoming season. So, again, I don't really see any fault with the deal. It's another deal of Dawkins, you know, working the margins and stockpiling these assets. So certainly a big fan of that deal. You know, obviously Colby Jones goes out. It's a guy that I was really happy with that they got at the deadline. Basically, you know, as a throw-in in that Marcus Smart trade, played very well. He had the game in Utah where he had 20-plus points. All those steals didn't miss from three. So, again, like, he has skill. But now he's not with a team. So hopefully he lands on his feet because I still think he's a good player. But, you know, it's not like he's that much better or if any better than Dylan Jones. So it's possible the Wizards got the better player with more potential in the deal and got a second round pick. I think it's a solid trade. Nothing to go right home about, but definitely one of those, you know, low key moves that Dawkins continues to make. So that's kind of, you know, catching up. Now we can talk about free agency. We can go ahead and talk about why I guess the Wizards have been very quiet. And I tried to warn everyone, you know, even after the NBA draft, where it seemed like there was, you know, a bunch of concern amongst Wizards Twitter and Wizards fan base that they didn't address their need, you know, at center, their need in the front court. You know, I tried to warn them that they still had free agency. And even at that, I tried to warn Wizards fans that it would be a quiet free agency. I said last offseason that it would be relatively quiet, and they ended up, I believe, re-signing Vucevic to a two-way, signing Valanciunas to that three-year $30 million deal, signing Bay to the three-year $18 million deal. So a couple low-key moves. They re-upped Gill. They technically extended Holmes, but they just kind of renegotiated that deal to bring it back. So again, bringing back three of their own low-key guys and then signing two, you know, low-key free agents, one coming off a torn ACL. You know, so nothing eye-popping or eye-catching there. They just kind of addressed some holes they had and brought back some of their own. And that's what I foresee with this, you know, current free agency. You know, the Wizards have done nothing, really. The only thing the Wizards have been in terms of reports is Malcolm Brogdon, you know, possibly facilitating some sort of sign-and-trade. And the sign-and-trades we've seen so far have basically included cash and a second-round pick going from the team that's signing that guy to the team that's kind of sending him and working with them in the sign and trade. So if you're looking at a possible framework, and I noticed Sacramento, as Jake Fisher reported, was a possible landing spot. They reportedly signed Dennis Schroeder. They're, you know, apparently engaged with Russell Westbrook, had a Zoom meeting with him as per Chris Haynes. So certainly they're kind of solidifying their guard position. I'm not sure if Brogdon still fits what they're looking to do when they added Schroeder. But it's certainly notable to see the Wizards that are, you know, possibly reportedly from Jake Fisher engaged in sign and trade talks around Brogdon. Again, if they don't find one, they'll let him walk for free. Not the end of the world. They certainly aren't going to bring him back. That'd be pretty shocking. But again, I try to warn Wizards fans, you know, it might be pretty quiet. You know, I still think they should address the center position. I think Sarr played at his best with help down low. And certainly I wasn't a fan of the Sarr-Valanciunas lineups that they started to roll out in the beginning of the season. You know, I just kind of thought it limited the Wizards' space, their switchability on defense. But again, I would like to see Alex Sarr with a more mobile center in the front court. You know, I discussed possibilities at that spot, the beginning of free agency. You know, Kevon Looney certainly has made those lineups work alongside, you know, other types of power forwards. You know, a guy like Clint Capela, rim running big, that can kind of, you know, patrol the paint and grab a bunch of rebounds. You know, some, you know, an area Sarr and the Wizards struggled in last season. You know, I thought Capela could have been great. He's back and signed in Houston. You obviously see Looney sign a 2-year, $60 million deal with the Pelicans. Luke Kornet was another possibility. He signs for 4 years in San Antonio. So that's a bunch of guys pretty early in free agency going off the board. And so now you say, okay, Greg, where can Washington pivot? And shout out to Spotrac, because I found most of the centers and the available free agents on that site. So definitely give that a check. But I wanted to, I guess, you know, the Wizards have the non-taxpayer and mid-level exception, which I believe is $14.1 million for this upcoming year. And the Wizards don't have to use it all. They can use all, you know, only $7 million of it. They can use $8 million of it. But they have it at the at the ready, and they still have some room to work with in terms of signing people if they don't want to use it. But I kind of went and narrowed it down to three different categories of available centers. Should the Wizards address it? Because there's certainly a realm where the Wizards, who I forgot to mention, tendered a qualifying offer to restricted free agent Tristan Vukcevic. I think it was a two-way qualifying offer. So they basically tendered him, and now I guess it's the same as a regular one. The Wizards are able to match any, I don't know if it's any two-way deal or any regular deal. Again, I'm not a capologist, but basically Vukcevic is treated like a restricted free agent. So it's possible that they have him and he comes back. You have Sarr, you have Olynyk, and that's kind of what you're working with now on your roster. You could bring back Holmes in a renegotiated deal like you saw last offseason, but you're still relatively thin at front court. I still think you really lack rebounding. You lack a physical presence down low, because that certainly isn't, Kelly Olynyk. It's not Sarr. It's not Vukcevic. And if you bring back Holmes, I don't know if he necessarily does much. And again, wins aren't necessarily the biggest goal next year, and I've gotten that comment a lot, and I understand that. I've been at the forefront of that, honestly. But you still want to put together a competent roster, because if you don't have a good enough defense, if you don't have someone grabbing rebounds, then everyone else is going to, follow suit. Everyone else isn't going to play as well. The team won't play as well, and that, as you've seen, can hinder development. If the team's just losing in bad ways and there's nobody there to grab rebounds, it's tough to realistically figure out how to get better in NBA minutes. As you saw with Middleton, the Wizards were 6-8 with him. Everyone around him played better, when Middleton was in the game, just because he was a player that affects winning. And so I certainly think they should sign a center. It would certainly help the Wizards, I guess, be worse if they opted for the approach of not signing a center. It would lead to more losses. But I still think they're going to be bad anyway. I still think that pick will convey. But I'm getting off topic. I want to get into some of these categories. So I broke it down into three categories: possibilities, highly unlikely, and sleepers. Possibilities, again, these are our free agents at the center position that I think are realistic. I think, could also, be willing to sign in Washington. Aren't necessarily guys that are looking for the perfect fit and are at the end of their career wanting to just win and contend. They're sort of younger end guys that I think would be willing to go and chase the bag. And it's possible Washington has the most of the middle level or outside of that to offer. That includes Rashawn Holmes, who, again, I said, has $250,000 guaranteed for the 25-26 season. If they fully guarantee it, which I believe they pushed that date guaranteed back to January, they have, Holmes on the books for $13.2 million. That's a little rich for me. Again, that's a possible renegotiation on a cheaper deal like we saw last offseason. Because again, I think, $13 million for Holmes, when you saw a guy like Dayron Sharpe, who some people commented for the Nets, I believe took a two-year $12 million deal. So again, I think maybe that's a good deal for Holmes on 2 years, $13 million. But certainly not 1 year of $13 million. So it's possible they bring him back. That's definitely a possibility. Mo Wagner, again, former Wizard. I still think this is a little bit of on the less likely side, just because he has the connection with his brother Franz in Orlando. I feel like that's a perfect spot for him, and they have the cap space. I don't know why they wouldn't work it out. Again, coming off an ACL tear, but should be ready relatively early next season. So definitely a possibility for the Wizards, but I'd say it's more unlikely than likely, just based on the connection he has with Franz. I don't know why he'd want to leave. It seems like a great situation for him there. Jackson Hayes is another one, younger center. I think he'd also be a guy that might be willing to go where the money's right, and it's possible that Washington is that place. He's a rim runner. I don't know if he's the greatest rebounder or defender. I don't know what his pairing would look like, in the front court with a guy like Alex Sarr, but he's a possibility, maybe for a short-term fix in that front court. You got Sandro Mamu Kalashvili. He had a really strong end to the season with San Antonio, has shown the ability to stretch the floor. So I don't know if he's the best complement to Sarr rather than maybe a good backup at the four or five position, but certainly a possibility. And then also got Charles Bassey here, also out of San Antonio. Bigger center that I think you could sign for relatively cheap if you're looking for, a cheap short-term fix. Those are, five or so possibilities there. The highly unlikelies: Al Horford, Miles Turner, DeAndre Ayton. It's been reported widely that Ayton is likely to sign with the Los Angeles Lakers. Same can be said for a guy like Miles Turner. It's been widely reported that he's looking at multiple contenders, the Knicks and the Warriors, you know, possibilities there. Again, a guy who's, you know, been on contenders. He passed up the Wizards all the time ago in 2018, free agency. So again, I don't even think he'd look anywhere near the Wizards. And then you got Miles Turner, who, you know, 10 plus years with Indiana, just made the finals. They clearly needed him, even if he wasn't the best in the finals. So again, I foresee him either re-signing there, and if he doesn't, that'd be pretty surprising, but certainly going to a contender. I doubt Miles Turner would want to go for all, you know, a lot of losing in Indiana to back-to-back conference finals, making the finals, and then go from that to Washington, especially because I doubt the Wizards can give him the most. He's probably looking at around 25 plus million in free agency. So certainly some available centers there. And then I got some sleepers here. I got DeAndre Jordan, Alex Len, and Jericho Sims as some sleepers I've been looking at. You know, for a guy like DeAndre Jordan, you know, maybe you can see him take a pathway of older guys that's, you know, just kind of sign with lesser teams and still make some money, but are more veteran mentors. We saw that with Taj Gibson the last couple of years, you know, on the Wizards when they started to really rebuild, and he was on the Hornets, you know, last season, I believe. So certainly a guy in Jordan, you know, that spent the last couple of years on a contender in Denver, maybe they don't want to bring him back, and he signs with Washington because they're one of the only teams that are, you know, offering some money. I think that'd be a decent short-term fix, maybe on a one-year deal. Would be a great veteran mentor to a guy like Alex Sarr in the front court, Vucevic as well, if they bring him back. So I think DeAndre Jordan's, you know, a good sleeper option if he opts to go the route of veteran mentor over, you know, trying to chase a ring on a contender. Already won a ring with Denver too, so I don't know how important that is to him. I believe with the Lakers too. Alex Len, former Wizard, has bounced around via trade. If he decides, you know, to come here again, that's a good body to have down low on a cheap one-year deal. Same goes for Jericho Sims. He's a bit on the younger side. So again, I don't know if that's what the Wizards are necessarily looking for. A player like Sims doesn't really offer too much offensively. He's a rim runner, though. He's a guy that can rack up rebounds and dunk the basketball, run the pick and roll. So maybe that's a decent fit in the front court, you know, hyper bounce, you know, guy alongside Sarr with good leaping ability. If he's on the dunk contest, he was terrible in the dunk contest, but he can dunk. Was traded to the Bucks last year, played decent minutes. I believe he got hurt towards the end, though. But those are some sleepers, DeAndre Jordan, Alex Len, Jericho Sims, that I could see brought to Washington on cheap deals, you know, short, cheap deals to possibly solve the front court spot. And, you know, they could also go the route of not doing that. They could sign some undrafted free agent to fill that role. Maybe someone impresses them in summer league. There's also the possibilities, I will say, of trades. I believe it was reported that Marcus Smart, Kelly Olynyk are two guys that are still being shopped in trade discussions. You know, Marcus Smart's a guy that's name's been talked about a lot. Kelly Olynyk, obviously, since the trade, you know, coming over with McCollum, is another guy that's been talked about a decent bit. So those are definitely ripple effect trades that could, again, open up roster spots, but again, showcase what the Wizards are trying to do. Corey Kispert, to this point, I haven't seen his name brought up realistically anywhere other than by Wizards fans wanting to trade him. So I don't know how real or how valid the possibilities or rumors are that Kispert could be on the move. He just wasn't drafted by the Dawkins regime. So again, I understand where it could be coming from Wizards fans, but I haven't seen anything to tell me that it's, you know, a possibility that Kispert gets done, especially, you know, considering maybe the most possible reason was a draft day trade, getting a little bit of a move up back into the lottery. Now that that's passed, I think it's, you know, highly unlikely that he gets dealt. But I also came on this podcast about a week ago and said I doubt Jordan Poole gets traded. So a lot can happen, but I doubt that Kispert is on the move. That's kind of the rundown of available centers, because I feel like a lot of my questions that I've gotten is, Greg, how are they even going to figure out how to rebound the ball or defend on the interior outside Sarr next year? And it's going to be tough. And again, I don't think wins are at the forefront. I think acquiring talent and developing that talent in minutes is at the forefront. So maybe they don't sign a center. I still think they will. I still think it benefits everybody around them, you know, around the team too, if they sign someone that can just be a body down low, maybe play alongside Sarr or give you some front court depth. But going off that, I want to break down the roster for a bit, because it's definitely interesting to kind of discuss where the Wizards are at from a roster building standpoint. I'm just going to run through each position, basically breaking it down based on guards, wings, and forwards, and then kind of, you know, dissect what it means for some of the guys on that list who could get cut or waived, who could stay, who they might want to prioritize over someone else, and how a free agency sort of factors into it. So getting into it, Washington's guards, and a reminder, it's a 15-man roster, 15 like guaranteed standard NBA deals, 3 two-way contracts. Okay, I'm going to stop rambling. Guards, Bob Carrington, CJ McCollum, Trey Johnson, Marcus Smart, AJ Johnson, Jameer Watkins. Wings, Chris Middleton, Bilal Coulibaly, Keyshawn George, Justin Champagne, Corey Kispert, Will Riley, and now Dylan Jones. Forwards, Alex Sarr, Kelly Olynyk. So if you break it down, you know, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 guards. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 wings. And then 2 forwards in Sarr and Olynyk. And those are the guys that are like locked down on contracts and still part of the team. So that's 15 guys right there. And you notice, again, I'm probably sure you're thinking, well, Greg, where's Tristan Vukcevic? I currently have him slated as a two-way. They tendered that two-way qualifying offer to him, making him an unrestricted free agent. So if nobody else extends him an offer, I would assume, you know, Washington is going to be able to bring Tristan back. I would assume there's mutual interest. You know, like they drafted him just 2 years ago. He's shown, you know, great offensive flashes. The defense has to get a lot better. He needs to get stronger. But I certainly don't think there's too much reason to be, you know, scared that someone will poach Vukcevic. But I think a two-way would certainly make sense, especially if they sign someone else to help out in the front court. Jameer Watkins is also another two-way candidate. So that could open up a roster spot as well. They have Jaylen Martin still under contract for that two-way deal. It was reported and confirmed, I guess, by Rick Pitino that his college player at St. John's Kadari Richmond, an undrafted free agent this past draft, signed as a two-way. So technically speaking, you got Jaylen Martin and Kadari Richmond locked down on 2 of the 3 two-way spots. That leaves one of the two-ways open. I guess it could be taken by either Vukcevic or Watkins. And if that's the case, the other one makes the 15-man on a standard deal, and that's your current 15-man roster. So it all kind of works itself out, I guess, because technically speaking, there's about 18 guys that are under contract. And you have Holmes with the with a guaranteed $250K. So again, they can let him walk. And if they do, everybody that I just named is basically their roster, depending on who gets the two-way between Tristan and Jameer Watkins. And then whoever doesn't get that two-way, I would assume is a part of the 15-man active roster on a standard NBA deal. You know, there's also the possibility that they part ways with Dylan Jones, 26th pick last year, but they don't have much attachment to him. You know, the deal, I don't believe, was made to take back Dylan Jones. I think it was realistically to take back that 2029 second. But Dylan Jones, 26th pick, still could, you know, has potential, still could pan out. I would assume I've gotten some questions about whether the Wizards will move on from Jones. You know, he's still 23. Like, I don't see any reason for them to not at least give him summer league to prove himself and then training camp as well, and then see where it goes. You know, they don't need to be in any rush to sort of open roster spots. But again, you know, that's kind of where they are. They're kind of set with that 15 man, and it's kind of hard to pinpoint people they can move off of. And like I mentioned, trades are possible with Marcus Smart, you know, certainly, you know, a guy like Kelly Olynyk. Those are people that could get dealt, and maybe those open up roster spots as well. But it just comes increasingly harder to open up those spots. And that's why, you know, Gil unfortunately had to get let go and waived. And same goes for Holmes. It's possible that they decide they can't bring him back. They don't necessarily want to part with any of the guys that they have on their team. But again, if they sign one of the centers in free agency they talk about, someone is going to have to go. And you know, maybe it's Dylan Jones. Maybe they move on from the Vukcevic experiment early. I wouldn't advise doing that. I still think Tristan has potential. But the point I'm trying to make here is that it gets interesting with who the Wizards are going to keep here. And I know there's probably some people listening saying, Greg, they're going to lose a lot anyway. So what, you know, who cares? And maybe you're thinking that, but it's the Wizards podcast. You're going to get every single detail about the team. And that's kind of where Washington is at. And again, like I mentioned, I've gotten a lot of Wizards fans, you know, asking me, you know, Greg, they didn't draft a center. They only have Sarr and Olynyk realistically with Gill now waived, and you don't know what's going to happen with Holmes. What are the Wizards doing? You know, I've seen people like, how will they possibly compete for a play-in spot? I mean, like, people genuinely are upset because Washington's roster might not be good enough next year for them to, like, contend for a last-minute play-in spot. Like, the Wizards are going to be probably bad again, and it would probably be to their benefit because in a really strong draft class next year, their pick's only top eight protected. If they're bottom four in records next year, they guarantee they can't fall outside the top eight, and they guarantee they keep that pick. So I think that's probably at the forefront of their minds. They're certainly not going to try to actively put together the worst possible roster to lose. Like, I don't think that's the reason they haven't addressed the center position. But I will say, and I could answer this, or my, you know, Will Dawkins, the Wizards GM, could answer it. He was asked by Kevin Sheehan a couple days ago after the draft, you know, about the lack of front court depth in Washington. Here's what he had to say. Quote, "The main focus is always going to be to put the organization in a position for our long-term success. The decisions we made are less about position and more about getting the type of guys we want in here stylistically and also giving them the runway to develop," end quote. Basically saying, hey, we're going to bring in as much talent as we can. We don't care if it's guards, wings, forwards, centers, whatever you want to call it. We want talent. We want it in the gym. We want it under contract, in the building. We want to develop it on our own. And that's what they're doing. They took Jameer Watkins, another wing, right after they took Will Riley, another wing, after they took Trey Johnson, a guard. You know, they had three picks in this draft. Didn't once look to address the front court or reach on a front court player. I doubt they would just do that or overpay in free agency, especially when they're trying to clear the books for 2026. It's possible these guys want long-term deals, and the Wizards are just not willing to do that. Maybe they just want a guy that can come in here on a one-year vet minimum and you know, eat up some minutes at the center position and then move on with their team in 2026 and they want to compete. That's a realistic possibility as to why they haven't signed a center. Maybe they just don't want to. You know, I don't know what's going on in their head, but nonetheless, that's kind of a rundown on some of the possibilities at center. Maybe, you know, Will Dawkins chiming in on why Washington hasn't addressed that yet. Some bit of housekeeping to round out the episode. My guy Matt Moderna was locked in reporting a lot of these Exhibit 10 contracts that the Wizards signed. You know, Keyshawn Gilbert out of Iowa State, Zeke Mayo out of Kansas, Jonathan Pierre out of Belmont. Those are some of the Exhibit 10s that the Wizards signed. If you don't know what Exhibit 10 is, it's basically a training camp deal. So I wouldn't, you'll be surprised if these guys are added to the summer league roster as well, but also their training camp deals. So at least to get to compete, I wouldn't say for a spot on the 15 man, but on the go-go, a spot on a two-way, certainly if they, you know, open up some two-way spots, those are all possibilities as well. But if you missed it, they signed those three guys to Exhibit 10s. They also released their summer league schedule, which I believe starts on the 11th of July. When they play Phoenix, and then the 13th, they play Brooklyn. And I believe on the 15th is Philly, and the 16th is Ace Bailey. So you'll get a glimpse of Kaman Malawak and Rashier Fleming with Phoenix. You'll get to see the five first-round picks out of Brooklyn. You know, Philadelphia with VJ Edgecombe and Janai Broome. You got Utah, who drafted Ace Bailey. You know, Walter Clayton, who was originally taken, I guess, by the Wizards and traded to Utah in that move back. So certainly going to be some intriguing summer league matchups. Be on the lookout for that. It's from the 10th to the 20th of July. And there's going to be a fifth game. It's just TBD. And then if they are good enough, which the Wizards roster should be good enough to make, I guess, the final four, it seems, for the summer league, they'll get extra games there. There's also Bilal and Sarr making the 18-man preliminary roster for Eurobasket on Team France. I believe Eurobasket doesn't start until September, or actually August, and it runs to September. But training camp for them starts on July 24th, which is 4 days after summer league ends. But if Sarr makes that team, I think Bilal will make the team. If Sarr makes the team and decides to play, I don't know if playing in summer league and also that is what the Wizards want. Maybe they'll say, hey, you should choose one. Maybe he only plays in one or two summer league games and gets held out. I'm not sure, but that's just something on the horizon to monitor, because I've had a lot of people ask me who's going to make the summer league roster. Will Sarr, will all those guys play? I think everyone, with the exception of maybe Sarr, will play. I doubt the third years like Bilal and Tristan will play. But if Sarr doesn't play, I think it would be because of Eurobasket. But that's going to wrap it up for this episode. Hopefully it was kind of a nice segue from what we saw, you know, a couple of days ago with Gill being waived and Jones being acquired. Also another Jones being sent out on Colby Jones. The updated roster, some options at center, why the Wizards have been quiet in free agency, kind of going through that agenda. So again, you'll be on the lookout. By the time I post this, or by the time you're listening to this, the Wizards could very well have solved that center conundrum, or maybe they decided not to. Maybe they're just holding out for whatever reason they have. But hopefully this was, you know, sort of educational episode to catch you up on everything that's happened the last couple of days for Washington. I'll be back throughout the week to kind of, you know, recap the draft as a whole. Obviously, if you missed it, I have episodes out with my guy Sam Stevens breaking down the Jameer Watkins pick. My guy Eric Henry, who covers Texas basketball and other sports for Horns 247. Great episode breaking down Trey Johnson's game with some great anecdotes and stories in there. And I obviously have to complete the trio, bringing on someone from who covered Illinois to talk about Will Riley. So if you have anybody who you know covered Illinois this season and can come on the pod to talk about Will Riley, drop it in the comments. If you have any suggestions for center, you know, or any other free agent signings for the Wizards, you can use the comments below. But that's going to wrap it up for this episode. Again, thanks for listening as always. Go Wiz.